It is part two of the John List and Stepfather series that I'm doing. It's not a series, it's literally just two episodes, but this is part two. I'm really excited to talk through my impressions of the movies. In the last episode, I discussed John List and his story of being a family annihilator and then going on the run for 18 years and then miraculously being caught because of an episode of America's Most Wanted and an incredible forensic artist who created a bust. If you have not gone and looked at the Instagram visuals for that one, please do it. It is truly deranged and amazing how he was finally taken down. This episode is going to be about the Stepfather series that was based on the John List character. I'm going to talk through my notes that I took while I was watching the movies. So I had never seen any of the series, as I said in the last episode. And so I chose to watch The Stepfather 1989, the original, starring Terry O'Quinn from Lost fame. And his blue twinkling eyes is the reason I decided I have to watch the original. I played with the idea of just watching the remake, and that's stupid. So, like, obviously, I have to watch the original. And I was so excited to do so because Terry O'Quinn from Lost was one of my favorite characters. I know that's a controversial opinion, but whatever. So, started with that one. Watched the Stepfather sequel. Which is not as good, but Terry O'Quinn was in it. And then there's like a third one. And I was like, I'm not going to watch that one. Terry O'Quinn isn't even in it. I think they somehow like discuss how he looks different. They like say, now Jerry looks, he's changed his look so he can continue. I don't know. I did not watch that one. Don't care. So the last one that I watched and I took notes over is the remake from 2009. And I just can't wait to talk to you guys about it because this is such a wild series. I was honestly really impressed because I expected it to be really cheesy because it's really a coin flip if an old horror movie that you don't hear talked about often is really good or really cheesy, or you just don't, you never know. But I was genuinely kind of impressed with the quality. So I wanted to start by saying the only other time I've seen List in a movie or TV show, like referenced his story or whatever, in a direct way was The Watcher on Netflix. But it was such an incorrect, convoluted way to present his story that I was annoyed. So I didn't like it. So if you wanted to actually watch something that was based on John List as a character, he's in that. I think his name is different. And they convoluted it. They like crammed it into a different story about a voyeurist. It was like a true crime voyeurism story and has nothing to do with this. But they tried to do something. It did not work for me. But you can watch that if you want to. I did not like it. Anyways, I don't think I finished it. Anyways, okay. So, Terry O'Quinn is the main character. He plays the John List character. Now, I'm going to be very clear. None of these movies it's not the John List story. It is just a pathology that they borrowed. So, unlike Family Annihilators, serial killers kill again and again because they have like a compulsion. Like they're compelled by some sort of like urge within them psychologically. And so the Stepfather character is scary because he's like a serial killer, but also a family annihilator. But that's not really the pathology of John List. As we know, John List killed his family, went on the run, started over. His wife was shocked that this was in his past because it did not seem like something he would do. And that's how a family annihilator usually does. However, that makes not a very interesting movie. So they have this man he is a serial family annihilator. So we start off with scary organ music over red credits against a black blank like screen. I wasn't sure that they were attempting a shaky cam, or perhaps it was just a bad crane shot. It literally, I never really figured that out, if it was on purpose or not, or they just had a bad crane. But it pans across this beautiful house and this gorgeous neighborhood, and we enter through the bathroom window, and we see our main character. Immediately, he's covered in blood. And I wrote, oh damn, we immediately get a full ass and frontal through a mirror shot of this man in the first 2 minutes. So the 80s were crazy for that. So Terry O'Quinn steps into the shower and he starts showering off. So at this point, I'm feeling like, okay, I thought this was going to be a little silly, but the first scene is pretty well done. So he showers and he cleans up and truly looks like a different person than he did at the beginning. So they like show him in the mirror, he takes a shower, and then he changes completely. He's like completely remade, but has to walk downstairs and exit through his heinous crime scene. And it's the entire family is downstairs covered in blood. The living room is ransacked, but he whistles as he leaves with his briefcase. And he picks up the newspaper in the front yard, even on his way out, and he strolls down the street in this beautiful neighborhood. I think that's a perfectly cinematic impression of thematically what a family annihilator kind of does. Like, it was, I thought that was really well done. So obviously he's not as careful as List, but it's very cinematic likeness to what actually happened in the juxtaposition of the beautiful neighborhood to the heinous crime and the like whistling. It's just, I liked it. The next scene sets the tone for this like happy teen daughter, Stephanie, being playful, challenging to leaf fight her mother, which is like cute. And then they're interrupted by like Jerry returns. So you get this automatic like moment where you're like, ew, oh, Jerry is interrupting this dynamic between mother and daughter. And so I said, guess who Jerry is? I also want to point out that I think the name Jerry is very funny for a serial killer. Okay. So already Jerry is overstepping his boundaries, calling Stephanie his girl, like being very familiar with her. And Stephanie is very uncomfortable with this. Stephanie's father died a year ago, and she, a year, this is so deranged. The 80s are crazy. So Stephanie's father died a year ago, and she is not handling Jerry's place in her life very well, which I don't blame her. Jerry wants to get along like better with her, but like it's been 1 year. What has been going on in this house that the dad died and then the mom is now with this man who is so closely, like so close to her that he feels comfortable calling this poor child his girl? Oh my God, I would absolutely want to kill Jerry. So Jerry slips up and talks to a little girl about his first daughter. Like, I think like he was passing her in the street and like he has this moment where you're like, is he going crazy a little bit? And he mentions Jill instead of Stephanie. And it's like creepy. Like he's like kind of, why is this man just allowed to be around random kids all the time? Like, what is going on? So there's something going on with Jerry where he like falls in and out of his reality, which I do think is contradictory to like the way he gets away with these, like the way he gets away with these crimes. Like if he's so good at getting away with the crimes, he would have to be very methodical and meticulous, but instead he can just slip up and say Jill's name, one of his victims. Anyways. Again, the 80s are crazy. So the next thing that happens is Stephanie gets expelled for fighting. That's insane. As a teacher, it's hard for me to watch shows where they have a school system and like things that would never happen in real life happen. And so I was just like, what? She's expelled from the district completely because she had one fight. This girl lost her father a year ago and we're expelling her from school. So her mother does not seem very concerned about this. Scripts back in this time are wild. I just watched a movie called It's Alive the other night. It was made in 1987 about a mutant baby. And they were also super like cavalier about the fact that this woman gave birth to a crazy like mutant baby. Anyways, I think the 80s needed to go to therapy. So mom is very unconcerned. Stephanie wants to go to a boarding school to get away from creepy Jerry, who says, it's not a family without children. And it's like, yikes, dude, please relax. Like, you're so creepy. So Jerry doesn't want her to go because he apparently, in order to feel like he has a family, needs her to stay there. And it's like, okay, well, where's she going to go to school. So I wrote that it's deranged that this mother wants her child to warm up more to Jerry when her father just died a year ago. Not a lot of logic in some of these plot points. Agree. I agree with Past Me for saying that. So apparently the entire neighborhood loves Jerry, but I don't really understand how long he's been around to build these relationships. If the dad only died a year ago, like, I feel like everyone would be kind of like weirded out that Jerry just like stepped into this role and within a year is like romancing their friend, their neighbor. So it says, oh shit, Jerry is losing it in front of Stephanie, but he doesn't realize it. So there's a basement in this house, and that's one of the things in the trailer is like when you watch it, there's a basement and there's a freezer in the basement. Foreshadowing. So Jerry goes downstairs to the basement for whatever reason, and Stephanie, I guess, needed to go get something. They're having like a barbecue or something, and Jerry is losing it. I guess like something went wrong, or he slipped up, or like he has to like let his anger out, not in front of people. And so he's like freaking out, and Stephanie can see. And so Stephanie later, she's like, after seeing this, she's like done research and looked at newspapers in neighboring cities, and she's already cracked the case, essentially. We're 29 minutes into the film, apparently, and 3 years earlier is when Jerry met Stephanie's mom, right after the murders. And so she's starting to think, okay, well, maybe Jerry is this murderer, and she starts looking for a picture of him. And I'm cracking up watching this, like, this poor girl, she would have been like a citizen sleuth if she had the internet, but she didn't have the internet. So the kid's therapist to me was creepy, but I guess in this movie, he's supposed to be like a hero. I hated him. He was very, very creepy. So the next scene, Jerry knows that Stephanie is onto him. And I wrote that in all caps because I was very scared of that. He opens her mail. Oh my God. That's right. So she writes to the newspaper or to the police department in where this murder took place and asks for a photo of the man that they think did it, because they think Jerry did it, but it wasn't, obviously he went by a different name when he murdered his other family. And they send the photo of him, and it's Terry O'Quinn. But Jerry knows that Stephanie is onto him, so he opens her mail and sees that it's from the police department. And so he like picks up a different photo and like sticks it in there to like cover himself. So I don't know. Jerry is wound pretty tight. He loses it when he can't keep it together in the basement. And it's very funny that this movie is trying to pretend that the police just don't care that an entire white, well-off family was murdered and justice has to be like fought to achieve for them. So that's another side story, is that the like Jerry's brother-in-law from his old family, so like the brother of the woman he murdered in the house at the beginning, is still trying to fight for like justice. Like, where did Jerry go, and why is his whole family dead, and why haven't we caught him? And I'm just like, there's no way they wouldn't be finding this man. Like, he would be number one person to go after, and it's not like he went that far. Like, Stephanie didn't have to research many like surrounding cities to find this man, but that's what they want us to believe. So the creepy therapist does not believe Stephanie about how creepy her stepfather is, which is very, with not even the stepfather, they're not married yet, but like the stepfather person. And it is crazy to me, because I'm just like, what are these adults for if none of them will even entertain what this poor child is trying to tell them? But again, it's the 80s, so I guess this is how it is. So then Jerry shows up at the therapist's office, because Stephanie has told the therapist what she thinks she knows, and Jerry beats the shit out of this therapist. So I would assume after that the therapist would believe, but then I write, oh, no, now he's dead. So Jerry kills the therapist, which again, I'm like, everywhere everywhere Jerry goes, people die. So I'm also like, well, people just not clearly know it's Jerry? Like, I don't know. So Jerry is a serial killer, not a family annihilator like John List. He loves to kill, And then he loves to whistle a little song. So he always whistles every time he leaves a crime scene. So Terry O'Quinn, I wrote, is very beautiful in this movie, even though he has like a weird wig and like he just is young and like soft-spoken and kind. And it's a perfect, to me, it's a very perfect casting because John List was very like soft-spoken and like then snapped. And I think that was the kind of demeanor that was necessary for this because he can also be really creepy. If you've ever seen Lost, you know what I'm talking about. The demeanor that the Terry O'Quinn brings to John Locke is very similar to what he brings here, and he can kind of go one direction or the other. So Jerry's ex-brother-in-law, who is also hot, is the one fighting for someone to care that his sister's entire family was massacred. So the librarian is going to be a hero in this case, apparently. The brother just found out where Jerry moved to because of the librarian. So Mom and Stephanie are talking, and Stephanie is like, I hate Jerry. I think he's a murderer, and no one will believe me. And so Mom slaps Stephanie across the face. The 80s really need to go to therapy. This is horrific. This poor child. It is Jerry that has helped us since then. So slap, how dare you, Stephanie? This is some boomer ass shit is what I wrote. I guess at this point he's like, now I need to switch into a different person. And so Jerry is starting to change from Jerry to whoever he's going to be. Because I think like he realizes that he is now burned his bridges in this family. And he's going to start having to plant seeds with a different family. Which I guess is why Jerry met Stephanie's mom. You know, before he killed his last family, he was already planting seeds with this family. Though I still don't really know how her dad died. I thought it was a traffic accident. Maybe Jerry did it. I don't know. So he is going to change his looks to be what the look will be when he's in this new relationship. And so he takes these glasses and he puts the glasses on. And you guys, they are John List's glasses from that bust. I was gagged. That's what I wrote. I was like, I am gagged. So Jerry has the List glasses on, not him revealing he has the List balding pattern also. So he takes his wig off and then he looks like John List. And it was a wig the whole time. Like, I didn't realize that. As Jerry, he's wearing a wig. And so then he takes the wig off and he puts the glasses on. And I was like, ah! Like, so. So I wrote, okay, so Jerry overlaps his game, setting up his new family while he's already currently in the family he's going to kill. This makes more sense. And he's a serial family annihilator. That is wild. Not a thing. Because there's no way you could do that over and over again and not get caught. But in this movie, he is. So the next thing I wrote was, you're telling me that the brother-in-law made it this far just to get stabbed to death by Jerry while he's literally holding a gun. That is true what happened. And so once again, Jerry wins out with a struggle. He murders someone else. It is the hot ex-brother-in-law. I don't know why the ex-brother-in-law didn't just pull the trigger, but he didn't. So the ending is coming. And this poor girl, Stephanie, is about to be vindicated because their mom is finally going to believe her. And it's a classic ending. Mother and daughter bring down the bad guy in an overly dramatic, way too many people cannot seem to stand and have to drag themselves around on the floor finale scene. So this happens. They go up the stairs. They go down the stairs. They're crawling. They're walking. They're falling. They're rolling. Stephanie is about to die, but then mom pops up even though you thought she was dead and she kills Jerry, or you think she kills Jerry. And then it's over. And at the end, Stephanie saw, at the beginning, I forgot to talk about this. There was a birdhouse that looked like their house that, like, I guess Jerry had put in the flower garden. And I didn't make note of it at first because I didn't know it was important. But she was like, ew, I don't like this flower. I don't like this little birdhouse in our flower garden because Jerry put it there. Well, this girl, she saws that birdhouse down. They don't take it out of the ground and throw it away. They saw it. So good for her. She and her mother get to be friends again, even though that mother slapped her. Absolutely insane. And I guess the brother-in-law gets nothing because he died. And I don't know if they ever even solved the other murder. So that's the end of the stepfather. And it wasn't scary, but it was fun. And the John List reveal really threw me for a loop because I really did think they were just going to be like, this is the pathology. And it's not, it's like, we like the idea and then concept, but I really love that homage to the John List story that he looked like that. Now, I need y'all to understand, though, this movie came out 2 years before the America's Most Wanted episode ran. So as far as they know, John List is still just at large. So this is, I think this is an especially scary concept, considering John List at this time had not yet been caught. And I'm wondering, did John List see this movie, or at least see a movie for the trailer and like clench up? Like, I'm very interested in that. Of course, we'll never know. One of my things that I love to do after I see a movie is I like to go to the Letterboxd and see what are some of the top rated reviews. And so I have one from Tony the Terror. He gave it 4 stars. And he says of The Stepfather 1987, "I love this movie because it's honestly pretty predictable, but damn if it isn't a great time anyways. A white man wanting to magically live the great white straight dream without actually having to obtain it isn't exactly the craziest setup in the world. I think that maybe I didn't fully embrace the series as a kid because honestly, my stepfather was an eye-rolly waste of space sort of nightmare who wanted his own great white dream to simply materialize in the form of my mother's money, and frankly, I didn't need a movie about one to remind me of how much of a creep mine actually was." Poor Tony. Terry O'Quinn and Jill Sholin battling it out in the attic is a fine moment in cinematic history. I really wanted that sled that goes flying across the floor to result in a stepdad decapitation. And this next one from Branson Reese says, "I can sort of see where this guy's coming from, but he's got to calm down," which I agree with 100%. So the sequel of The Stepfather, Stepfather 2, came out in 1989. So that's the year that the America's Most Wanted did air. I don't know at what point in the year he was caught, if this movie came out before or after, but it is really not the same as the first one, so it doesn't even really matter. Okay, so Jerry's not dead, y'all. I don't know if you saw that coming, but Jerry's not dead. He wakes up in a psych ward dreaming of the events of the first movie. So he's still wearing the List glasses and has the same balding pattern as List as well. So this is like just what he looks like now. And so he goes in to like talk to a therapist at this prison that he's at, in this like psych ward ass prison. And he murders the only guy who like treated him like a human being. Like, this man is so kind to him. Everyone was rude to him. Like, the security guards and stuff taking him down to the therapy room. And this one guy was like nice to him, but then he kills him so he can escape. And he takes the security guard's clothes. Honestly, this is still a pretty slight opening is what I wrote. So Terry O'Quinn has such beautiful glittering eyes. They literally twinkle. They always will. That was one thing that always drew me to him in Lost. I'll stop talking about Lost. I'm sorry. But like, I love Terry O'Quinn. So somehow, maybe with his twinkling eyes, he becomes a group therapist somehow. I don't know how he does this, but he speaks to women who have lost their husbands, which is where he picks up his next victim, which I don't honestly know what Jerry's aim is. He seems to have this idea of what a perfect family is, and then as soon as it's no longer that, he kills the family and goes searching for the next one. But he also just like what are you looking for? I'm very confused about this. Okay. So Jerry is definitely a Republican, I wrote. Strong family values is what his stance is, you know. Damn. Okay. So cutting from the car of this woman's murdered husband being crunched at the dump to Jerry, convincing her it's for the best her husband left, is pretty clever. I like the way that they just use like these shots to show what his motive is. Like, his name is no longer Jerry, it's Gene. And I just feel like if you're going to choose a name for yourself, why would you choose Jerry and Gene? Like, these are really silly, lame names, but like, go off. This is the kind of person that I imagine John List is. He has Gene energy. So I get it. I guess I get it. But dang. If it were me, I would not be choosing these names. The next thing I wrote was, not this man pouring milk out of a pitcher. What? The wildest thing I've seen in both these movies. So, yeah, the 80s are wild. And this man honestly, literally acts like he's from the 60s, the 70s. To pour your milk out of a pitcher is maybe the best evidence we have so far that he is a psycho. So some of the kills in this are more interesting than the first movie. He literally punches someone to death in the first one, but like not in a believable way. In this one, there's more believable kills, I guess. It's more of like a slasher film. So the whole time, this woman has a young boy, like a sweet son. He's not like Stephanie. He didn't hate Gene or whatever he's being called, but he's kind of a nothing. Like, he's just there. And at one point, I thought his mother was going to think that the son killed her best friend. Her best friend did not trust Gene. And so, of course, Gene has to kill this woman. But that isn't what happened. At one point, he was trapped by Gene and was able to escape because he thought on his feet, which is not something I foresaw. I thought that these were going to be, usually in the sequel, people are dumber and they write them dumb. I don't know. I thought he was going to be stupid, but he wasn't. So at the end, we have, and I'm already to the part where it's the big finale, because there's not a lot that happens in this movie and there's not a lot to speak towards the true crime story we talked before. But there is this woman, and she's laying there saying no, 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 no to a man halfway across the room. But there is a literal door open behind her. I wrote, girl, get up and run out that door. But she doesn't. I don't get it. So instead of escaping, the little boy comes to the door and takes the stepfather out with the back of a hammer. Like, damn. So I guess they needed her to not run out that door so that the little boy could come through. I don't know. It was badly orchestrated, but that's the end. It's no shock to me that Tony the Terror wrote a review for this one too. So I'm going to read it to you guys. So it says, part two of a series with at least three. So, okay, so I don't enjoy this one quite as much as the first, but it's still pretty damn fun. I think these movies are so predictable because these have been so many imitators, because there have been so many imitators since the original release. Things like The Sitter, The Crush, The Boy Next Door, The Brother-in-Law, The Third Cousin's Neighbor One, Street Over, etc. But this one keeps things lively enough to stand out. And that's mainly due to the performances of Terry O'Quinn and Meg Foster's eyes. And they are the greatest eyes of all time. Oh, Tony has a crush. The scene where Meg and her son walk into her own wedding covered in blood is not only my supreme aesthetic, but also everything I love about cinema. So he gave that one 3.5 stars. And so we are finally at the remake of The Stepfather from 2009. The 2009 movie seems to start with a similar scene of the dad shaving and showering, but we get no full frontal, thankfully. And then he puts in these blue contacts to hide his brown eyes. So when he comes downstairs, he carries two large suitcases with him. And as the camera pans across the family pictures, you can kind of see the scene behind him. And then in all caps, this made me really happy, I put, oh, he turned on the CD player to play Holy Night, and he makes himself toast and coffee. So this is a very List-like thing to do, as we talked about in the first episode. He puts on the music before he leaves his dead family, and he makes himself like dinner. And so, and it's very like white bread dinner, like this is. It says, bro even cuts his toast in half like an absolute freak. Yes, like it's fine. Well, you don't have to cut it in half like that, okay? Damn. So the camera pans and reveals his dead son right next to him at the table, which I thought was a really interesting way to do it. So, like, you know his family's going to be dead, but you don't expect him to be eating his toast right next to his dead son at the table. So I really like that ad. His entire dead family is in the living room. He leaves the scene, setting the alarm system as he goes, a little girl dead in the entryway, and just leaves. What a psycho. And so I was really digging it at the beginning. That was a really good opening. And I think that 20 years after the original, it was a nice homage to how they started the first one. So it says stabs and blunt force trauma are how the family died. So a much more violent death than the actual deaths. And I honestly, they never even talk about how the family in the first movie dies. So I'm not really sure. Oh, and it says these don't seem to be the first man's children. He is already stepfathering and murdering. So this isn't even his family. He's already in the middle of his pattern. We're joining him where he's already a serial family annihilator. So Joe Goldberg from You is the Stephanie character. He's going to get a really good tutorial, I said, on how to be creepy in this. And so we're already heading to the basement, which was the scary spot from the original. So when this scene began, I was like, okay, are we already going to see the stepfather kind of crack? I'm sure it's the time period this was made, but this one was automatically scarier to me. The stepfather was scarier. He was cold. He was kind of rugged, like not John List-like at all. I don't know if a man like John List could exist outside of that time period. So that's probably why. Just in the aesthetic that he had, it just wasn't the vibe anymore. He would have stood out too much if he had been like that in the early 2000s. But it's already scarier. So they start to, they actually mention in this movie that on America's Most Wanted, there was an episode and the neighbors saw it. And they said the sketch looks just like the stepdad. And I think his boring ass name was David or something. They're always choosing these dumb names. So the wife laughs about it because she's like, oh my God, what are the odds? It's not true. It's not David, but it is David. And I do think that this scene is really cool that they kind of, it's released, this movie's released 20 years after John List was caught, and he was caught because of America's Most Wanted. So I don't think it was by accident that they put this moment in the remake of the movie that was based on the pathology of that character. So I thought that was kind of interesting. I really like that. Unfortunately for the neighbor who identified him, David was not going to be very kind. His new girlfriend says, oh my gosh, our neighbor said this. Isn't it so funny? So she like told on her friend to the murderer. So he goes and he throws this neighbor down the stairs and he suffocates her. And he's gonna let the cats eat her face. Oh, this was so terrible. Like, And it was like an old lady. So it was even more sad. So this man is much more violent and much more deranged than they showed Jean Jerry being. But the actual father in the story sucks too. So, like, you kind of hate both of them, but Bio Dad, who comes by to see his kids and Joe Goldberg, which is his oldest son, does attack David for putting his hands on their youngest kid. He loses it. He kind of snaps and David puts his hands on his youngest, and the youngest tells his Bio Dad. So it's really... You hate the dad because he sucks. He's like a deadbeat, but he does want to try to beat up David. And you're like, well, David's a serial family annihilator. So we do want that. The mom is a psycho for not dumping stepdad immediately. I don't know what her problem is, but she does not dump him. And so the whole time I'm just like, well, this is your fault because you're an idiot. Why would you allow a man who put his hands on your child, your youngest child? Why would you allow him to continue to be in your house? Like, she sucks too. So all of the adults, like in the 80s movie, suck in this one, just for different reasons. So one of my things that I hate the most is when movies make characters stupid to keep a plot going. But I guess I just had to, I guess I just have to accept that this woman is a bad mom. So yeah, that's what I had to end up doing. So the stepdad ends up, which, by the way, he's not a stepdad. He is a boyfriend, but he's like in that role. So the stepdad, David, killed Bio Dad because he was onto his lies. The soundtrack is so 2009 and forcing itself into the most random places, but it slaps. So if you're ever interested in listening to the Stepfather remake of 2009 soundtrack, I highly encourage it because that is my jam.
This man may have psychosis because he's actually hallucinating his dead family. So it's kind of a reference to when Jerry in the first one slipped up and said Jill's name instead of Stephanie, where he forgets where he like what part of time he's in and who he's talking about. You and it literally isn't like a slip of the tongue. Like he literally honestly is talking about Jill and then has to come back to where he is. So he pr I feel like David, they gave David like a psychosis. But again, that doesn't really speak towards him being able to get away with these methodical and meticulously well-planned out murders if he's losing time and like disappearing from reality. So we're finally in the basement with the freezer because that's been like a thing this whole time. Like, what's down there? Why does he go down there? And so Joe Goldberg, it's not who, his name is Michael in the movie, but like that's who he is to me. Michael, the oldest son who has come home from college and is like, who's this weird new man in the house? He goes downstairs and he opens the freezer and it is his dead father in the freezer. So it's just like, ah! Like it's very, very like huge reveal. Michael freaks out and is like, okay, I knew something was weird about this man. Well, now I know that he's a murderer and my mom is an idiot. The finale ensues. David gets violent with the family. He punches Michael's girlfriend, I think, because at one point the girlfriend's like trying to help bring him down. It's very strange. He says the creepy line from the original, "Who am I here?" which is like him trading off all of these different identities so that he can continue to like create his pattern. So I really liked that. He's stabbed with broken glass, like in the original. And we end up in the attic again, like in the original. So a lot of homages to the original. Michael eventually pushes David off the roof. But he also falls. I'm like, what? Keep your feet. And so Michael is in a coma and wakes to find that David got away. So David did not die. He got away. And the ending scene is David meeting a new woman with kids. And we don't get to see the police find the body in the freezer, which really bummed me out. If I'm being honest, we don't get to see anything, but we do know that David is continuing his tried and true pattern again with another poor single mom. Letterboxd has a few great reviews for us. They're short and sweet. This one is from Virgin Final Girl, 2.5 stars. This was a really nice origin story for Joe Goldberg. I see he takes after his stepfather. So we had the same mind. This one from an account called Ely gave it 1 star. It says he wasn't even their stepfather. He was literally just some guy. Again, I agree. It was fine. I gave it 3 stars myself. Overall, the series were what the series was fun. I'm glad I skipped the third stepfather in the series because it was going too far off the rails for me. There's something about being a true crime fan watching movies like this where it's not as fun if it's rooted in reality because you're like, okay, well, look at all the evidence he's leaving behind and look at this and look at that. Like, it's just, it was too crazy for me by the end of the second one, but I really enjoyed the remake as well. There was enough homages to the source material that I thought was, like fun for me as a true crime fan. To say, oh yeah, so they did do their research in this regard that oh they're showing America's Most Wanted or they're showing that they put these specific glasses on Terry O'Quinn. Like that was cool. That was cool to me. So at the end of the day, I think it speaks to how terrifying it is of a concept to have known someone who could have done these things, but they have no hint of that in their personality, like the duality of that, the capacity for a man who seemed calm and quiet and gentle has a horrific murder in his past that he's running away from. I think that's why movies like this exist, because that concept is so absolutely terrifying. But this is the end of part two. It was a little clunky, but those movies were fun for me to watch. I hope you guys enjoyed it, and I will see you next week.